Okay, morning. Today's Daf and Baba Basra's Mem Gimel. We are in Mem Beis, Amud Beis. We are starting with the words today, Gufa. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel made a statement yesterday. We try to make some sort of reconciliation between two statements of Shmuel regarding the nature of a partner. The Mishnah taught us yesterday on Mem Beis Amud Aleph at the bottom of the Amud that there are certain people who have rights by rights are on other people's fields and therefore never establish a chazakah, never create a occupation that results in a that results in ownership. So the and the Mishnah lists a number of people who by right are to be on other people's properties. So the Mishnah's examples are a sharecropper, a custodian, so a husband to his wife, a wife to his husband, a child to his father. In other words, there are certain people you just expect to be there on the property. And occupancy can never result in ownership. However, one of the people listed in the Mishnah is a shutuf, a partner. So being that we're partners, so therefore, I'm by right part owner of the property. So therefore, you expect me to be on the property. And so that means, according to the Mishnah, that let's say for the next 3 years, I'm the only partner on this property. So a simple pshat in the Mishnah is that I don't acquire the property just because of my occupancy. Meaning, I can't simply say now 3 years later, hey, there's no longer any other partner to this property. I bought out the other partner. You can't say that. In other words, the understanding is that when you're a partner, so by right, you could be here on this property. So that was what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah in terms of the gears of the Mishnah. So what I just presented as the Mishnah yesterday was the Girsa of Shmuel, was the Girsa of Avuah de Shmuel, was the Girsa of Levi. So, okay, that's the way the Mishnah presents itself. Shmuel, on the other hand, does not present the Mishnah that way. And the Mishnah says that Shmuel says that the Mishnah has the girsa of Uman, a craftsman, which we discussed at length yesterday in the Mishnah, but it does not have a shutav. According to Shmuel's girsa, he does not have the word shutav mentioned in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says it is contradicted by another statement of Shmuel, which is that when a partner goes onto the property, he does so berushus, he does so with the permission of the other partner, which would seem to indicate that you have permission to be on the property, and therefore your occupancy can never result in ownership, because you're basically there under the umbrella of the other partner. So your occupancy can never result in ownership. So really, we have conflicting statements within Shmuel regarding how a shutav, whether a shutav can use occupancy as a form of ownership. So the Gemara yesterday gave a couple of suggestions in terms of how to explain the discrepancy in Shmuel. The first suggestion of the Gemara yesterday was, well, we'll make a distinction between whether he, the partner, is sitting on half the property or whether he's sitting on the entire property for 3 years. And in terms of how that makes a distinction, so yesterday the Gemara pointed out, it can go in either one of two directions. And again, go back to yesterday's shir and go over yesterday's shir to see how it can work out in either direction. And the other way the Gemara dealt with this issue is it really depends on the size of the field. Meaning that if it is a large field where there's room enough for the two of them, so then you should expect both partners to be on the field annually. However, if it's such a small field where there's not room enough for the two of them, so then we don't expect both partners to be there simultaneously, and therefore it is expected that one partner is going to occupy it at one single time for a lengthy period of time, and therefore that occupancy does not result in ownership. Okay, that's just a quick sum up of what we saw yesterday. Gufa, we continue now, and we're going to be quoting a statement made by Shmuel, and that is the following: Gufa Amar Shmuel Shutuf Kiyard Birshus Dami. That when you have the Shutuf, so he's like going into the field with permission. The Gemara says, "My kamash malan shutfin min lo chazaka." So the Gemara says, "Now, what was the purpose of that statement?" Presumably, the entire point of that statement is to teach us that a partner does not create a chazaka. So the Gemara says, "Well, that's interesting. If that's really the entire purpose of that statement, so say it and say it clearly. Let Shmuel just simply say lema shutav ein lo chazaka." Meaning, let's not beat around the bush. If we want to say that a partner does not create a chazaka, so then just say it. There must be some other connotation to the statement of a shutav is ki yored birshus dami, that he goes in with permission. So the Gemara acknowledges, the Gemara says, you're right, there is another connotation to the statement. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava Baravu Lomar. So the Gemara says the connotation goes like this: Shenota b'shevach hamigil ktafayim b'sada shein asulita kisada hasulita. So it must mean the following, that he's able to take the shevach, the grain, that it reaches, the approaches the shoulder height, on a field which is not normally planted for trees, as if a field that was planted for trees. Okay, in a vacuum, there's no way that we're supposed to understand the statement of Rava Baravua, meaning without the necessary background information, all this gets lost on us. What in the world are we talking about over here? Let's take a look at the bottom Rashbam. The bottom Rashbam over here really fills us in on the details regarding the significance of the statement in explanation of Shmuel. It's the last Rashbam in the Amud. Kedin Arish Yard Birshos. Okay, so if you remember, we had this discussion back in Bamitzia. I'm a sharecropper. Now, if I'm a sharecropper and I go into your field with your permission, which means that we contract, I'm going to work your field and I'll plant whatever I feel fit should be planted, and we're going to split the yield, and the percentage will be just based on the custom. So So if we agree that we're going to be sharecropping, and I go into your field, and it happens to be that there's already crop grown in your field, well, even though I didn't work the field, but we've contracted that we're going to share a crop, and that is considered crop, and therefore we're going to share. And let's say that this field really wasn't meant for trees, it really was meant more for wheat. But I made the executive decision that, you know what, I'm going to plant trees over here. Who know? Tell kol dino kilo asulita kidina yard birshus. Again, once we agree that I'm going to be the sharecropper, so then whatever I decide to plant, we're going to go halves on or whatever the percentage is. Fine. Once you allow me to go in to your field to share crop, so then I can make executive decisions of what I'm going to plant, and we'll share it. However, I'm sorry, if the ilo yari shalob rishus, I'm sorry, yeah, continuing in the Rashbam. The ilo yari shalob rishus, shaman lo viyado la tachtona. You go into somebody's property with no permission. Now, I know we discussed this back in B'mitzia, and it's strange. Meaning, if I go into somebody's field with no permission and work the field, so the truth of the matter is, I mean, we could use easy words to describe me, like a ganov or a goslin, but I'm not really taking anything, though. In other words, what I'm doing is, it's chutzpah, there's no question about it, but I'm working your land and I'm going to raise produce on your land. Now, if I do that, what kind of reimbursement can I be entitled to? So the Gemara in Bava Metzia discussed it, and here the Rashbam reviews with us what basically I can expect. Very little. And the Gemara there in Bava Metzia goes on to explain. Yadol ha-tachtona, that my hand is really, I have the lower hand. Let's say the profit is greater than that of the expenses, then all I get are the expenses. Now, if the expenses are greater than the profit, which means that it was a terrible business model, but if the expenses are greater than the profit, then all I get is shir shevach. Then all I get is the profit. All this is articulated in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Perek HaShoa, which parenthetically we're going to see a second time later this morning. If I go into my friend's field and I plant without his permission, I'm a Rav Shaman Lo V'Yadol HaTachtona, so we're going to make some sort of evaluation, and I have the lower hand. Shmuel Amar, Omdim Kama Adam Rotzi Lita Nosad Ezu Lita. And Shmuel's of the opinion, well, let's do a general assessment of how much he would have paid for somebody plant in his property. Seemingly there's a debate over there in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel, Vam, Rav Papa lo plige. But Rav Papa says there really is no debate over there. Kam besada solita, kam besada sheno solita. It depends on whether or not the field was meant to be planted with trees or not. If it was meant to be planted with trees and I planted trees over there, so then we'll do some sort of assessment. If it was meant to be planted for grain and I planted trees, so then yadol ha-tachtona. Anyway, that's all as per the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Now with all that stated, that's a lot of background information, but with all that stated, ha-cha chashiv la-hashutav kiyar b'shus. Now when I am a partner on a property with somebody else, and I make executive decisions of what should be planted over there, so now the question is a very simple one. Am I considered like a sharecropper who was not given permission to work the field, or am I like a sharecropper who was given permission? That's what we're learning together right now. That as a partner, I'm considered considered like a sharecropper who was given permission. That is what's meant by our Gemara now that says, look, even if really the field was not meant to be planted with trees, and I made the executive decision that I'm going to plant trees, fine. I'm allowed to make those kinds of executive decisions. And if Shmuel would have just simply said that, you know what, Ein lo chazaka, I might have thought that I have no permission to work the field and make these kinds of executive decisions. That's why Shmuel said that a shutuf, that a partner, is considered like somebody who goes in with permission, meaning that I am entitled to make these kinds of executive decisions. Okay, ad kan. That takes us to the end of yesterday's daf, the end of the discussion regarding what Shmuel meant when he said that a shutuf is yorid kirishus. And now we continue. Now, when I say we continue, we go back to a statement made by Shmuel yesterday. You remember that yesterday Shmuel made three comments regarding a shutuf. If you look back on Mem Beis Amud Beis, towards the top of the Amud, Azar Shmuel Atami, I'm just rereading what we saw yesterday, Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel made three statements. Statement number one, HaShutfim Machzikin Zeh Al Zeh. So number one is that they can create a occupancy against one another. And again, we already discussed this at length. In other words, this statement goes against the other statement of Shmuel, but fine, we resolved it. Two, the second statement of Shmuel, Mi'idin zeh al zeh. They could testify one for another. And then finally, number three, the third statement of Shmuel is that Nasim Shomrei Sachar Zeh LaZeh. That they can, that in terms of how we view the custodial relationship one to another, they are considered Shomer Sachar, not a Shomer Chinam. Okay. For today's first Amud, Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, we're going to be focusing on the second statement of Shmuel, that a partner can testify one to another. That is really difficult to understand. Your ability to testify is only based on impartiality. If I have no gain on that which I'm going to testify, so then fine, that could serve as a witness. But once I have a vested interest in that which I'm testifying about, so then I can't testify. The Gemara refers to this concept as something called nogia badavar. I have a bias, and therefore my biases will probably lead me to lie about the matter. Meaning the easiest way to say it is that when you're nogia badavar, so now we have chashash sheker. We are concerned that you're going to lie about that which you're testifying about because it's human nature. We all like to think we're objective, but especially if we have a benefit coming in our direction, so it's going to taint our objectivity, and we're going to be inclined to lie. That's the easiest way to say it. There are other ways to say it, but quite frankly, that's just the easiest way to explain it. So you are no gebadavar. So over here, if you have partners on a field, so that means that if any part of the field is taken, so it's not just his field, it's also my field as well. And the Gemara asked the question really simply. Midin zelazeh amai. Top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. No gin be'edusanein. They're no gebadavar. The Rashbam on the very top of the Amud writes, no gin be'edusanein. Yechozman shelo chilku lagamrei. As long as we don't have a division of our property. Imito shum ma'ar klum. If any challenger were to take any part of the property, minasada, yafsidu shneim. V'nimsa delatzma made. So I'm no longer testifying about somebody else, I'm testifying about me. And this is no gabadavar, and it is a really straightforward question. It's such a straightforward question that, quite frankly, like, you wonder, like, what was Shmuel saying to begin with? What the Gemara is going to do, this part's going to be tricky. What the Gemara is going to do now is it's going to really minimize the scenario in which one partner can testify about another partner. And basically what we're going to do is, it's going to be a really, really limited circumstance based on a number of variables that we're going to play with. And based on all that, only in that limited circumstance can one partner testify on behalf of another partner. But basically, as per the strength of the Gemara's question, one partner cannot testify on behalf of another partner on a partnered property, being that, of course, I'm not just testifying for him, I'm really also testifying for myself. So here the Gemara begins now a complex scenario in which one would be allowed to testify for another. So the Gemara starts off by the following. So the Gemara starts off with the following. Well, we'll start off right here. Where one partner says to the other partner, you know what, I'm excusing myself from my end of the partnership. I'm divesting myself. So the Gemara says, "Hachma my skin of the kasav light dinu dvarim ainli al sadazu." I no longer have any kind of judgment interest in the property. So okay, it's an expression the Gemara uses. In fact, we saw this expression used in the Gemara in Ksuvos, and the Gemara is using the same expression over here. So basically, now what he's trying to do is basically remove himself, divest himself from the property. Excellent question. V'chi kasav la mai have, the Gemara says, even when you do that, and all you're doing is you're trying to remove yourself from the property, that from a transaction standpoint is insignificant. The Gemara says, "Va'atanya." The Gemara quotes the Brisa. This takes us back to the Gemara Ksuvos. Ha'omer lechaver dinu dvar mainly outside the zoo. Ve'ain li esek ba v'yadi mesulekes haymenu. If you try to use language in which you're not actually transferring the property to somebody, all you're doing is trying to remove yourself from the property, that has no legal significance. The Gemara here, the Brisa, gives three different examples of what simply will not work. If you say dinu dvarim ainli al sadazu, I have no more interest in this field, or ainli esek ba, I have no business in this field, or yadis misolekas haymenu, my hand has been removed from this property. All three languages speaking to the same basic idea. I'm trying to excuse myself from the property. So lo amar klum, you said nothing. So it simply has no legal ramification to just simply try to remove yourself from the partnership. In other words, what you have to do is you have to make a transfer from you to somebody else. So the Gemara says, "Hach by my skin and kishakana biyado." So the Gemara says, okay, so what you did is that you made a transfer, meaning you made a kinyan. Whenever the Gemara here uses the word kinyan by itself, it's a reference to a kinyan sudar, so you made a transfer. So the Gemara says, "V'chikana miyado mayhave." So the Gemara says, well, that's wonderful. So now you transferred. But hare ma'amida bifne bachovo. But the Gemara points out, you are still going to have an interest. Meaning, again, what our goal is over here is we're trying to create a situation which the testifying partner has no longer a vested interest. So one, what we suggested is that he removed himself from the partnership. The Gemara says he can't do that. So then the Gemara says, well, he made a kinyan sudar, transferring it from him to the other. So the Gemara says, once again, that's just wonderful, but he still has a vested interest. Why does he still have a vested interest? The Gemara's expression is, "Hare ma'amida bifnei bachova." What does that mean? So, the Rashbam over here writes, "Akat v'chi kani biyada mayhave." Rashbam is the first long line on the page. "Akat yamai me," it's halfway down. "Akat yamai me lahamid asad biyada hare nogea beidazer, denich aleshiyo asad biyada shutuf, memnesha ma'amido hai nose lifnei balchovo." Let's say the ex partner who is now testifying, let's say he had a creditor. What's going to happen now in terms of the creditor coming after him? So if he has properties that are free and clear, so the creditor is going to come in, take it from him. But let's say he doesn't have any properties that are free and clear. So now what's the creditor going to do? He's going to come and take from properties that he previously had, because there was a lien on those properties. Well, if he now has if he once had this property, but he divested himself from that property, and now we clarified, he didn't just divest himself from that property, but he transferred it over to the other partner. Still now, to him, there is a vested interest. What is that vested interest? The Rashbam writes, "Shim yesh lo shem balchov, shil vao maus kodim sheiknel chaver chalko, shayya lo besada yavo balchov, v'yitref oso, sharei chatsa meshubedes lo." Well, what this creditor is going to do is this creditor is going to come and take half the property, because half the property once upon a time belonged to him. And therefore, there was a lien on half the property. And that now will relieve him of his obligation. Oh, once you're paying off a creditor and you relieve yourself from an obligation, that's called a benefit. And the Rashbam says, "V'lo yelove Russia," because why is that a benefit? Because even though nothing came out of your pocket, but you know what? You're no longer a bad person. If you default on your loans and you have no way to pay your lenders, so you're a lover Russia. you now have a terrible reputation. You have, right? You have bad credit. But once you pay off your loans, so now reputation repaired. You're no longer considered Rasha. That's considered a benefit. So the Gemara says, so even when you divest yourself from the property and you transfer over your half of the property to the other partner, but in the event where you are testifying on behalf of that property, keeping that property within your partner's hands, thus allowing your creditor to come and take that property away from him, you now benefited because now your reputation has been repaired. That's the Gemara's point. You're basically setting up the land so that your creditor can come and take the land, and that's a benefit to you. And the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, this is a statement made by Shmuel. Let's say I sell property to my friend, and I do so with no achrayus, meaning I have no personal guarantee. So basically, I'm saying to my friend, you're going to be taking a risk. You're going to buy this property, there may come along a creditor, and he may take a land away from you, and you just have to assume that risk. And probably what's going to end up happening is that the cost of the land is going to go down, the price is going to go down, considering that there is risk, the risk involved in the sale. But anyway, if you do so, ain mayin lo alaha. Let's say somebody comes along and challenges the ownership of that property, and now you know that, hey, the property once belonged to you, and you rightfully sold it to somebody else, and you want to testify. You can't testify, says Shmuel. Why not? Because basically now what you're doing is you're setting up the property so that your creditor can come and take it. And even though, remember, you sold the land with no guarantee. So what's coming out of your pocket? Nothing. Nothing's coming out of your pocket. Meaning the land will be taken away from the buyer and nothing will come out of your pocket. And meanwhile, you can't testify. Why can't you testify? And the answer is because you're Nogea Bedavar. So you're Nogea Bedavar because your reputation now is going to be much improved. You do pay off your debts. Okay.
What's the difference whether the one who he's indebted to takes it away from him or takes it away from his partner?
It doesn't matter. In other words, that's exactly the Gemara's point. You still now have partiality because now your debts have been satisfied. Your reputation now has been improved. And so you're right. That's exactly the Gemara's point. So once you are now partial, so you can't testify. So we go back. This takes us all the way back to Shmuel's statement where Shmuel said one partner can testify on behalf of another partner. And now the Gemara is still stuck because when would that ever be? So the Gemara says, Hach b'maiskinan dekabalai achrayus. So the Gemara says, well, we're going to be talking about an extraordinarily limited case, and that is where you, who were the seller of the property, sold the property with a guarantee. The Gemara says, wait one second. Achrayus daman. The Gemara says, let's clarify that point of guarantee. Inema achrayus d'alma. So the Gemara says, are we talking about a guarantee where if anybody comes along and challenges his legitimacy to ownership, which really means that they're questioning your legitimacy to ownership. And basically what the challenger is saying is, you never owned the property and you never were able to sell that property. So the Gemara says, Koshekei denichale. So the Gemara says, now, if you go along and testify on behalf of your buyer, and you're now saying, well, the buyer really owns it because I really owned it, of course you're partial. Because once that land is removed from your buyer, so then now you're going to have to reach into your pocket and you're going to have to reimburse him. So the Gemara says, in such a scenario, of course you're biased. In the event that the land is taken away, you're going to have to pay for that land. So that can't be what we're talking about. Ela achrayus da'asilei machmate. So the Gemara says that what we're describing over here is an extraordinarily limited circumstance where you say as follows. Look, I'm going to sell you the property, and I'm going to sell you the property with really limited guarantee. And it goes like this. If somebody comes along and challenges the ownership, your legitimacy to ownership, which again really means my legitimacy to ownership, if somebody comes along and challenges it, so basically, what can I tell you? That's a you problem. I'm not going to get involved. And not only am I not going to get involved, I'm not going to guarantee anything. So if it's taken away from you because somebody says I never owned it, yeah, that's something that you're going to have to deal with. And I'm not guaranteeing that. The only thing I'm guaranteeing against is that in the event that one of my creditors come along and takes it away from you, so then I'll reimburse you. It's a limited guarantee of I'm selling you the property and I'm only going to reimburse you under those circumstances. Now, the v'chim asalik nafshei mineh, I'm sorry. That's already a new point. Sorry. So, under those circumstances, and under those limited circumstances, then, in a case where I would have to testify, so I can testify. Okay, now, as the Rashbam goes through it, basically, what are your possibilities? Your possibilities are that somebody's coming along and claiming legitimacy of the ownership. You see, I don't have a vested interest, because if somebody's questioning his legitimacy of ownership, so I can testify, because it's not going to affect me one way or another. Meaning, even if that land were to be taken away from him, I don't have to pay. And if somebody comes into and if a creditor comes along and tries to take the land away from him, so under those circumstances, it's not going to affect me either, because I did guarantee for that limited circumstance where if the land's taken away from him by one of my creditors, I'm going to pay him back. So in this very limited circumstance of limited guarantee, so because there is really no way where I will benefit or gain, under those circumstances I can testify. So, to put everything together now, when Shmuel said that one partner can testify about another partner, what we really have done is super limited this scenario where, A, I divest myself from the property, B, it's not just a divestment, I transfer it over with a kinyan seudah, and C, is that when I sold the property to my partner, I did so with a limited guarantee of, I am not going to reimburse you in the event that somebody challenges the ownership, but I will reimburse you if one of my creditors comes along and takes away from you. Under those three circumstances, when you put all those together, then I will have no partiality in my testimony, and then I could testify. So really, the truth of the matter is that even though Shmuel made what seemingly is a very large statement, what the Gemara really did is minimize it to an extraordinarily limited set of circumstances. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, we're on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. We are a little bit less than halfway down the page. So the Gemara says, now you're trying to excuse yourself from the property, divest yourself from the property. The Gemara says, but let's consider the following brisa, which is, let's say you have a city where a Sefer Torah is stolen from the city. So ain danim bin dayane oso ha'ir, the ain mevian raya me anche oso ha'ir. So the case cannot be judged by the judges in the city, nor can you bring proof from people living in the city. They all have a vested interest. Okay. So, the Im Isa. Now the Gemara says, now let's think this through. So the Gemara says, can't we do what we suggested earlier and have two people divest themselves from? Now when I say from over here, this part gets tricky. What are they going to try to divest themselves from? Right? This part makes me laugh. Right? I'm not going to shul anymore. Two people now saying it. We're not going to go to shul anymore. We're not going to hear Kriyas HaTorah anymore. Right? We're not. Right, right. We're going to create a big breakaway minyan, by the way, and a breakaway minyan made up of two people. That's right. So the Gemara. I guess for those of us who've been around long enough, like, it's not crazy. I mean, it's crazy, don't get me wrong, but I guess. V'im Isa, Lisalka v'chayminayu, Uledainu. So the Gemara says, well, why can't two people of the city who were victims of the theft just simply divest themselves from the Sefer Torah? The answer, which probably you guessed, is Shani Sefer Torah Dulishmi Akai. So the Gemara says you can't do that. Meaning, if you want to divest yourself from an actual asset, so the Gemara says that's fine. Over here, what are you going to try to separate yourself from? Right? I'll come to shul, but I won't listen. Which again, I also right, I know, that's happened as well. Okay, moving along. Yes.
Why can't words cause a divestment? Because you can just say, I'm making this property hefker, and that works.
Right, correct. The if you're the sole proprietor, so yes. But in other words, in a partnership, in other words, by definition, you can't just simply declare it ownerless. You have to transfer it over to the remaining partner. But I do understand your point, though. In other words, you could just leave a vacuum, and the other person will do so. The Gemara Ksuva and our Gemara today simply does not subscribe to such an idea. Okay. Tashma. The Gemara is now going to quote a second brisa. The second brisa is going to be very similar to what we just said. Ha'omer tenu manu livnei iri. So if a person says, I want to give a gift to the members of my city. So ain danim b'dayani oso a'ir ve'ain mevi'an raya ma'anshi oso a'ir. Now as far as the allocation of such a gift, so the members of the city nor the people of the city can testify regarding such a gift, because they're going to be the recipients of the gift, and once again they have a vested interest in a gebe davar, and therefore you can't testify. So the Gemara says, so let's have two people just simply divest themselves from the gift, meaning whatever the gift is going to be applied for, we're not going to get benefit from it, and therefore we'll have impartiality, and therefore we could testify. So the Gemara says, Achanami b'sefer Torah. The Gemara says, yeah, but the gift happens to be a sefer Torah, and once again, it just can't happen. You can't have two people divesting themselves from a sefer Torah. Tashma, the Gemara says, let's try this a third way. So let's say a person gives a gift to the poor of the city. So in this third brisa, so clearly the gift over here was not towards the sefer Torah, but rather it was directed to the poor. So ain done in b'dayani osa'ir. So the judges of the city can't judge, which in of itself is hard to understand why not. We'll clarify that point momentarily. And you can't bring proof from the people in the city regarding the allocation of that gift. The Gemara says, "V'tizbara aniyim shakli dayanim ifsalei." So the Gemara says, "Wait one second, I'm just not following. Who are the recipients of this gift? It's going to be the poor people. Clearly, this gift was for the poor. So, what's wrong with the judges judging that case? They don't have partiality. They're judges. They're not receiving the gift." So the Gemara says, "Elaima indanim b'dayane aniye osa'ir." So the Gemara makes a good clarification. Well, the judges in question over here are poor, which in of itself is interesting, right? In other words, they just simply don't have means, but they're wise and they're learned and they know how to judge. So they're poor judges. So they do stand to now be recipients of that gift. And obviously now as such, so now they have a vested personal interest in that gift, and therefore they can't judge in such a case. And who can't testify? The poor people, because they stand to be the recipients of that gift, and therefore they are not impartial. Good. Now we understand the brisa. So the Gemara says, okay, why not have, well, first of all, why not just simply have two non-poor people testify? But okay, let's assume that's not an option. So now the Gemara says, so let's have two of them divest themselves. So hachanami b'sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, once again, what we're saying over here is sefer Torah. Now that's a difficult pshat. Right, that's a difficult pshat, but the Gemara defends the pshat. Mm-hmm. Now the Gemara says, now the brisa does describe aniyim, poor people, so the Gemara says, da'akol eitzah sefer Torah aniyim hein. Because the Gemara says that as it relates to the general relationship people have towards the sefer Torah, a sefer Torah is an extraordinarily expensive commodity, and therefore everyone can describe themselves as being poor vis-a-vis a sefer Torah. So it's not out of the ordinary for the brisa to describe everyone as being poor in respect to a sefer Torah. That's one possibility, and then we're back to then our beginning position, which is that you can't divest yourself from a sefer Torah. You can't just simply say, "Hey, I'm not. I'll come to shul, but I won't listen." The Gemara says maybe we can also be describing aniyam mamish, meaning we will stick with the simple pshat of the brisa that we're talking about just regular poor people. And the Gemara says if aniyah de ramu alaya. So the Gemara says and as far as why it is that people can't testify, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why people can't testify. So because, meaning people, meaning non-poor people, because the non-poor people stand to benefit as well. Why? Because right now, everyone in the city had a responsibility to give to the poor. And now, once somebody gave a significant gift to the poor, so that's going to relieve everybody from their obligation to have to give. That's called a benefit. And therefore, that's why the people in the town are not considered impartial. So the Gemara says, Hechidami, the Gemara says, but even this point needs to be clarified. Ide kitzlu, lisve betre minayu. So the Gemara says, well, let's say that there is an expected gift that everybody needs to give for the poor in the city, and it's a set amount. So the Gemara says, fine. So if everyone has an expected set amount that they need to give to the poor, so let them give them that set amount. So now they're paid. So now they don't stand to benefit from this major gift that was given to the poor, as they already gave their money. So the Gemara says, "Hach b'may iskinan d'lo kitzlahu." So the Gemara says, okay, well, maybe first of all, to make it simple, we could be talking about a scenario in which it's not a fixed amount that everyone needs to give. Everyone needs to give based on need. And once there's a big donor, so then that'll diminish the need, and everyone will have to give less. So then again, we back to everybody in the town will be partial. Ebay Sam, the Gemara says, or another thing to take into consideration is Lolam de Kitzlu. No, maybe we can stay, like we said previously, it's a fixed amount, and still I'll argue that there is not impartiality. Why? Nichlu de Kevin de Revach Revach. Because basically what's going to happen is that if this big donation goes through, there's going to be a surplus. And even though this year, maybe I already gave, and therefore I'll be quote-unquote impartial, but you won't be impartial. Because once there's a surplus, so then the following year, your need to give is going to be diminished. And the Gemara basically says, under all circumstances, it will relieve the city of their responsibility, and nobody can really claim impartiality. Okay. Adkan. Okay, so as I marketed today's daf, the first half of today's daf all revolved around Shmuel's second statement. Shmuel said that partners can testify one on behalf of the other. The Gemara's first part of today's of the Amud Aleph dealt with the simple question of how in the world can one partner testify about another? You know, Gabba Davar. And what the Gemara really did is constricted the entire scenario to an extraordinarily limited scenario when one partner can testify about another, but only after divestment, only after Kinyan Seder, only after giving some sort of partial guarantee. Okay. And then the remaining part of the Amud Aleph today dealt with people within the city testifying about a theft, testifying about a major donation that was given to the town, and basically, for the most part, we're talking about a Sefer Torah, and nobody can really divest themselves from a Sefer Torah. Nobody can simply say, hey, I'm not going to hear the Sefer Torah anymore, and therefore everybody remains a Nogeh B'Davar, having a partiality, and as a result of that, the case cannot be tried in the city. We're going to have to take the case and move it to another city. Nasin Sherman Sachar Zelazah. Moving on now to the third statement of Shmuel, and that is when it comes to partners. So their custodial relationship one to another is a Sherman Sachar. Why? As I explained yesterday, just to quickly reiterate, because of reciprocity. Meaning that if I'm a partner and I'm guarding something today, there's an understanding that my other partner is going to take the responsibility tomorrow. And therefore, we have a reciprocal relationship one to another, and that basically is in exchange for payment. Meaning, instead of paying me to watch it, he's going to pay me through his services, and as a result of that, we are considered now no longer Shomer Chinam, but we're considered Shomer Sachar. And of course, the big difference is, if you're a Shomer Chinam, you're Pater from Gneva Aveda. Once you're Shomer Sachar, you're going to be Chayv Gneva Aveda. The Gemara on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Beis asks a very simple question. I say it simple after you know the 8th Perek of Bamitzia. Amai Shmir Bebalim He. So the Gemara points out that the difficulty lies in the fact that it's Shomer Bebalim. Remember, we learned back in the 8th parak of Mitzvah, it's based on a pasuk in Chumash, that if I am asked to wash something for somebody, or even if I borrow something, the truth of the matter is the Torah describes it in the context of she'ila, of borrowing. But the Gemara in Bab Mitzvah points out that it also applies to a regular shomer as well. If I'm borrowing something, and while I'm borrowing something, the person I borrowed from is also employed by me, so then I'm pater. I don't have to pay for any damages that occur. Okay, why? All right, the Torah never says why, and quite frankly, the Gemara never said why. The easiest way to say it is gzeiras hakasef. I mean, that's really the easiest way to say it. The Rishonim offer explanations in terms of why. For our purposes right now, we don't need to know why. Be nice, but we don't need to know why. Over here, all we need to know is the following. That when you have partners and the partners are working on a property and then one lends to another, call them a shomer sachar, call them whatever you want, it's shmir v'balim. Right now, one is employed by the other. I mean, they're both employed to one another. And so therefore, as a result of that, there should be an exemption. So Rapapa says that the case of Shmuel is dealing with a case where we were alternating days. I'll watch it today, you watch it tomorrow. So while I handed it over to you, we are not concurrently working together, and therefore it is not Shmir Babalim, and that's what Shmuel's coming to tell me. It's not Shmir Babalim, but it's still Shomer Sacher, and it's Shomer Sacher because, once again, like I explained, we have now this reciprocal relationship where I'm watching it today, and you're going to be paying me back with the service of you watching it tomorrow. Okay, Adkan. Tana Rabbanan. We are on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We're at the two dots. The Gemara discusses the following: Machlo Bais, Machlo Sada, Ein Mid Lo Alav Mimnesh Achriyaso Alav. If I sell you a house, if I sell you a field, so I cannot testify about it for the simple fact that I am not impartial. In the event that that land is going to be taken away from you, the house is going to be taken away from you, so I'm going to have to reimburse you for that because I sold it to you by achrayus, and therefore I have a vested interest, and therefore I can't testify. However, contrast that with machlo para machlo talis. But if I sell you a cow, if I sell you a cloak, an article of clothing, may it lo alam imeshein achrayaso alav. So I can testify about it because I don't have achrayus. When I sell you a movable, the assumption is that I don't have a personal responsibility. Now, okay. So the Gemara's question is very simple. Maishna Risha, Maishna Seifa. Meaning that we have in a default assumption in this Braisa that when I'm selling you property, I'm selling it to you with achrayus. But when I'm selling you goods, so I'm selling it to you without a chayas. Now, if you think about it, it is a little bit strange. Meaning, I sold you a cow. The cow never belonged to me. And I had the chutzpah, the audacity to sell you the cow. And the cow was taken away from you. So you mean to tell me that I don't have to reimburse you for the cow that I sold you, which really I had no right to sell you? And meanwhile, when I sell you property and the property is taken away, so I do have to reimburse you. So the Gemara's question is, what's the difference between the two? So the Gemara now is going to go through a series of scenarios in which we're going to understand why there is a general default assumption that when I sell property, it's with achrayus, but when I sell movables, it's without achrayus. So we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with Rav Sheshis' explanation, and it goes well into tomorrow's daf. So really, we're going to start a sentence that goes well into tomorrow's daf. So this will be our point of pausing. Let's just quickly recap. Today we finished up the discussion of why did Shmuel say that when one partner goes into another partner's property, does so berishus? And the answer is that basically, in terms of how they view each other's, the relationship between one partner and another, it's like a sharecropper who goes into somebody's property, authorized, not unauthorized. And that has a lot of halachic ramifications in terms of what he can share in terms of the profits, like we discussed in the beginning of this morning. The main part of today's daf is the idea that Shmuel says that you can testify, one partner can testify about another partner. The Gemara says, how can you do that? You know, Nogei Abadavar. The Gemara limited the scenario. If we have a theft or any case that affects the entire city, so no member of the city can judge or testify about it, because we all have a vested interest. Like a Sefer Torah was stolen, like someone gifted a Sefer Torah to our town, and whatever. And then for whatever reason it went into litigation, so none of us can testify because we all have a vested interest. Somebody makes a major donation to our town for the poor people. So we all stand to benefit because it's going to relieve our tzedakah responsibility. So again, the Gemara made the same point. Therefore, we all have a vested interest and we're nogei b'davar, and therefore we cannot testify. And finally, the Gemara talked about the third statement of Shmuel, which is that partners have a shomer sachar relationship one to another. Why don't we use the tour of Shmir Bebalim? So Rapapa said because they were alternating days, and so therefore they were not working concurrently. And finally, the Gemara quoted a brisa describing the buying of a house where, in the event that the house is taken away, I have to reimburse. If I sell movables, I do not have to reimburse. And tomorrow we're going to start the discussion of why there's a default assumption that they're different one from the other.